Welcome to Osteocast, where we talk about all things osteopathy, functional anatomy, and movement with your hosts, myself, Sarah,
Colby,
and Amanda. Please note that this podcast is not medical advice and is for educational purposes only. Please seek advice from your primary care physician when necessary. Here's today's episode.
Today we're talking about treating children, also known as pediatric manual osteopathy. So we're going to talk about different ways we find helpful for treating kids, perhaps any tips or tools we've learned over the years. If you've ever treated a child under four, you know you literally have no idea how that child is going to come to you that day, even if you've treated them many times before. So you need to have lots of tricks up your sleeve regarding how to keep them in the treatment process and open to your hands on their body. They don't necessarily need to be on the table, of course, but just open enough that you can get in there, figure out what's going on, and then get some mechanical work done on that body as needed. So it's really helpful when you have kids in your office to make sure that mom and dad are on board to help you. And if they are kind of sitting back and not sure what to do, then you need to instruct them on how to help you in the treatment process. So whether it's they need to entertain the child, if they need to, you know, maybe hold the child in a specific position and kind of soothe them if they're a little bit upset while you get your work done regarding if you're checking their spine, checking their head. And you want to play with the kids, right? You can make the process really fun for everybody. So do you guys have any specific cases you want to bring up where you've kind of maybe had to come up with new ideas or new strategies to get through that treatment?
I think from an initial standpoint, when you talk with parents, whether they've been in your office as a client or they haven't been in your office as a client, it's really important to set the expectation that kids don't have to lay on the table nice and flat and straight, and they don't need to be forcing them to lay down, that we are adaptable to treatment. And this could look many different ways each time they come in. So setting that expectation, I often feel, helps parents relax in terms of treatment, because most of the time that is typically the experience in other professional offices where something needs to be done in that time frame. And that's not how I approach treating kids in my office. We try and make it fun. We let them push the button on the table so that they can lower the table to be able to jump up on the table and make it an inviting space so that they feel more comfortable with you. But it looks really different depending on the day, depending on the patient, and depending on how the child's mood is that day, let's just say. So setting that expectation, I think, is really important from the get-go. You as a practitioner have to be very, very amenable to changing your plan on the fly to make sure that you can get done what you need to get done. And that comes with practice and experience. It looks different with every kid. And it's often not that they're laying flat on the table still as can be to let you do whatever you'd like to do to be able to provide good treatment.
Yeah, it's always going to be a different scenario. And as you talk about expectations, I know one thing we were talking about before we got on the podcast that I find is an important expectation with the parents as well, on top of all of the things you've already mentioned and talked about, is just having the expectation that when you come for treatment, if your child is not cooperative or not interested in having treatment that day, regardless of all of the toys and tricks and stuff that you do, it's okay to move it to another day or try the next day or a week later or whatever that may be, because you need to have a child that is at least allowing treatment to happen and not completely defiant to it, which does sometimes happen. And if you have that expectation with the parents, then the parents won't feel any sort of, I always find in clinic that they feel some sort of embarrassment, or they feel like the child has to receive treatment when they're there, and it's okay if not. So I like to preface it with that so that they're not like getting upset with their kid, because then it creates a negative environment for the entire treatment and it makes treatment more difficult in the future, if at all can happen again.
That's so well said. Yeah, it's super important. And I think as a practitioner, you have to be comfortable to make that call, right? To say, you know what, this just isn't working today. Let's try again tomorrow or the next day or whenever that's amenable for you and the patient.
Oh, you don't charge the patient.
No, of course not.
No, God, right? No.
If like treatment didn't work, like it's no one's fault. It's just, you know, you kind of just take that as a lieu time, and the parents are really appreciative, right? That there's not a punishment for their child not listening or not, you know, able to receive treatment at that time.
And sometimes depending on the mood of the child in that scenario, you just take the entire game plan away from doing a treatment and just doing it to building rapport with the child as needed, right? Because sometimes you can play a game and they'll be happy to play with you, but they don't want to have treatment, and that can build rapport as well for the next time they're in.
And typically if I'm treating the parent, I will tell the parent to bring their child with them to one of their treatments, or maybe two of their treatments. So they've at least seen the space. They know what it looks like. They know that we have, you know, toys to play with or something fun to do, so that that rapport starts to be built prior to them being the person sitting on the table.
Even them watching their parents get treatment, right? I'm sure that has a lot of benefit for kids, because kids generally mimic, right? They mimic what their parents do. So if they know that, oh, it's mom and dad do, like, this is something I should do too, that's already kind of creating that subconscious feedback that treatment is a good thing for them.
And if kids are a little bit older and you can have a conversation with them, I have had some kids that are more like 7 or 8 come in that are very nervous about what's going to happen. I'll show them my assessment on their parent first, and then ask them if it's okay if I do that with them, so that they have at least seen it. Maybe they haven't seen a treatment in the past. So that's a good way to show them what you're going to do and show them that it's okay, and give them the power to tell you that, you know, I don't want your hands there, or, you know, tell them to speak up if they're uncomfortable at any point in time. Make that very clear from the get-go.
Yeah, of course. So outside of the expectations to set as far as being able to start the treatment process and go through a treatment when the child is there, what are some of the ways that you treat, you know, pediatrics or children differently than you do with adults?
So really depends on their age.
So tell us about that.
With babies or young kids that are probably under, that can still be held, that'll still sit still. Sometimes it's that they're laying on the table. Sometimes it's that I'm holding them like their parents like to hold them. So I ask what position they're comfortable in. Some kids really like a football hold or to be held up over their shoulder, and I try and do some of the treatment that way. Typically, if they're fussy, I try and move around as that's happening, or try and bounce a little bit to try and keep them calm, or have them look out the window or something like that. If kids are starting to move and crawl, that's always the most difficult time to provide treatment, because they can move, and often that's very exciting for them. So keeping toys on the table, having something for them to play with, having a distraction. Sometimes I also will set them on my knee and keep them between me and the table, so that at least their pelvis is set straight and there's a toy then on the table in front of them, so that we can provide treatment that way. And if nothing else is working that day, but they're still amenable to it, oftentimes putting on their favorite show will be helpful. So that's something you can discuss with parents prior to treatment happening, to make sure parents are okay with that. But that can be a last resort and can sometimes get them to a point where they're comfortable, or at least sitting still for long enough for you to get some sort of a change.
Yeah.
Definitely. I find lots of singing, kind of sing talking to the baby or the infant, right? Just they generally will stop crying and kind of look at you to see what you're doing, what noises you're making, mm-hmm. You know, ask mom and dad their favorite song. Let's sing their favorite song together.
Yeah. Playing peekaboo is a big one, especially if you're trying to get a rotation out of the child. So you can put your head over one shoulder if they're facing away from you, and then back, and they'll twist and turn, and you can create a fixed point where you need it to be. Another way though too is if the child is really not taking on treatment, sometimes I have them lay on their parents on the table and treat them that way. So at least they're looking at their parent. Yeah. Or have the parent hold them in a position that's comfortable. Yeah. And then treat them that way.
Yeah, it's good to get the parents involved when the children are a little bit hesitant, for sure.
Especially when they hit that like separation anxiety stage. Yeah. Which happens at different times for different kids, but typically that's like 9-10 months or in and around that scenario, they just really don't, they don't want to be away from whoever's brought them in. Typically it's mom, but might be dad as well, or parent, but having them involved keeps things, keeps baby happy. 'Cause that's also really important. If they get too worked up, your treatment isn't going to
be. Yeah. And usually like, once they get worked up, you can't change the direction of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times once a kid's gotten worked up, that's the direction it's going, and changing that can be difficult. And sometimes you just have to call it and move on to another day.
Yeah.
And I do find once you've seen the child a few times, the process or the treatments definitely get easier. Like they start to recognize your office and understand that you don't hurt them when you treat them. It's actually kind of fun to be there, which is always really cool too, when you kind of get those days where, you know, the 2-year-old lies on your table and just doesn't really move, or as long as mom and dad is holding their hand or kind of playing with their feet, they feel comforted enough to let you do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and once they're like 2, 3, 4 years old, typically they just want some kind of a control aspect to the treatment. So asking them, do you want to lay on your back or do you want to lay on your stomach? Giving them a choice of where they want to be helps because they think they have the control and you can adjust your treatment to wherever that's going to be. Sometimes I have kids lay on the table and they say they want to lay on their back, and 2 minutes later, they're like, okay, I'm ready to sit up. And they're not going to lay down. Okay, you can sit up. Like you just have to be ready to kind of change that on the fly. So as in terms of treatment, is there specific things that you're looking for with kids that look different than adults? So when we talk about movement capacity, patterns, and assessment, is there a specific things that you're finding more in children than adults, or that you're looking for more in children than in adults?
I try my best to keep everything completely open so that the information can flow as smoothly as possible. I don't necessarily have specific things that I'm looking for versus not, but having a detailed understanding of the anatomy at the certain age or the milestone that you're at, as well as a detailed history of the things as a child or in childhood, like their birth and their progression and where they are, is important, because that will give you some insight as far as some of the changes that should be happening naturally in the body, as well as some of the complications that go with it. Typically though, one thing that I will mention, and everyone knows this, but children and their bodies are a little bit more malleable because they haven't had to deal with the stressors of life that come over years of repetitive movement or sports or other things that come up. So treatment generally is a little bit more focused on the innate healing abilities of the body and the overall function of the body, opposed to dealing with like a mechanical stressor. But that would be my two main points, is to keep your mind opened to flow as needed with the patient, and have a good understanding of the anatomy and the milestone that they're at or that they're working through, to see what some of the complications with that may be.
And I think just knowing the right questions to ask mom and dad. So Colby, you mentioned the birth and how that went, and of course, depending the age, right? Asking if they turn their head both ways, if they notice they're using, you know, one limb less than the other, and then going through those different milestones to see, okay, did they, you know, what age did they crawl? What age did they walk? You know, if especially if they're coming in more for a check-in and nothing specific, but of course, if they come in with a specific fall or something really specific that has happened to the kid, that gives you a little bit more of a guidance too of where you're going to start and then how you're going to kind of flow in and out of that treatment, just to make sure that you check that the child is okay from the injury, but then also how are they developing, how is their body sitting under gravity at this age.
Yeah,
so the answer to your question, Mandy, no.
Well, and I was more so looking for the like the mechanical side of things, like where are they at in those milestones, and why is it important? So when you're asking parents specific questions, for instance, once kids are sitting and moving, are they sitting in a position like a W sit, for example, that might be causing or driving some of the mechanical patterns that you see. So being able to ask those questions, but noticing too that it's going to be different depending on the milestone or the age that they're at. And you do need to understand what that looks like. Kids change quickly. Their movement patterns change as they grow and as they're in different stages. So that's super important to understand. We, as adults, we have way more compensations and long lines and fascial stuff going on, but kids, it's very different. And they're often malleable enough that change can happen quickly. So your hands have to be sensitive enough to notice those things.
Yeah. And not only just within their bodies, but like on a weekly basis, depending on the age, they're learning new skills and changing how they're moving. So you can't just have them come in and work off of a previous assessment. Like, it's important to know what you saw last time, but you have to be aware of the changes happening in front of you and what the patient has going on at that time.
And then for the hesitant practitioner who maybe isn't sure if they're ready to treat infants and or young children yet, do you guys have any recommendations for them? Would you say wait until you do feel confident and you're ready to treat them? Or are you more of the attitude of jump in, give it a try, see how it goes?
I think treating kids is a privilege and you have to be very confident in what you're doing. So if you're uncomfortable doing that, I would say take as many courses as you can and work with someone who feels comfortable treating kids so you can learn as much as you can before you're just taking a stab at it in the dark.
And kids can feel your confidence, so they will know and give you a much harder time if there's any hesitancy on the practitioner's end.
Yeah. I think that, kind of as Amanda was saying with confidence, like you have to do your due diligence and understand where they're at and what they're doing. So it's important if you haven't gone through the anatomy and the developmental milestones, both mentally and physically, that you should have a general understanding of that before you dive into treating the young ones. Just like you would with adults, you have to have a certain level of anatomy and understanding to be effective. I think the same thing goes for kids, and knowing the differences is very important. Once you have that understanding, then dive into it, start having fun. The only way you're going to learn and the only way you're going to progress is if you're doing so. And you're 100%, just like every other patient or practitioner or group, you're going to have trouble with some of them, and you're going to learn how to, you know, build rapport or work with a child or how to move a child differently. And all of these little nuances you'll have to learn in practice on your own. So do it and just be aware of it. And if you have friends or family that have children you can start to work with, that's always an awesome choice so that you're not working directly with a patient. But yeah, dive into it. You have to try and have to learn.
I think too, the common expectation is that you have to treat kids how you've seen someone else do it. And if that doesn't work for you, then that's okay, but figure out what does work for you. And if it looks different than what you've seen or what you've experienced with other practitioners, if you've shadowed or you've done courses, that's okay. It doesn't have to look a specific way, as long as when you assess and treat the child, you're getting the treatment and the results that you need.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you have any questions, please reach out to us on Facebook at Osteocast or on Instagram at Osteocast_. We'd love to interact and chat with you. Also, it would be great if you guys could leave us a review or rating, and will help us reach more and more people over time.